Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. The Clark Hulings Fund exists to provide training, introductions, and funding for working artists to turn working artists into thriving artists.
I'm Daniel DeGree, your host. Our guest today is Gonzalo Fuenmayor. Now, Gonzalo is a multidisciplinary artist who's worked in painting and photography, but is best known for his charcoal drawings, which, in their precision, resemble black and white photographs. He's also a 2014 Clark Hulings Fund grant finalist. Gonzalo, welcome. We know you're an artist, of course. Can you take a minute to tell us a little bit more in your own words about your background and what you do for a living?
Thank you, Daniel. Yes, I'm an artist, a visual artist. I was born in Colombia 39 years ago, and I've been living in the U.S. For the past 18 years. I am a multidisciplinary artist. I focus on drawing and painting, primarily drawing, and I've been sort of flirting with photography and video for the past years. I am based in Miami and been here for the past 8 years. So, I'm very excited to have this conversation with you.
Well, we are too, certainly. And I wonder if you could start off by telling us what differences there are, if any, between the art market in the U.S. and Colombia and that part of the world.
I've been here actually living half of my life, so I'm more used to what's happening in the States. But when I go back home, I see like a huge difference in number of collectors, museums, shows, galleries.
Talk to me about the logistics of selling art internationally. So how do you ship things? Do you work with customs a lot? What tips do you have for people who ship works overseas?
My primary market is in the U.S., and I'm based in the U.S. I have a gallery in Miami and in San Francisco. I also have a gallery, which I will be working with in Colombia, that promotes my work. The way I've been, like, logistically, I make my drawings wherever I am. Maybe it's in Miami, maybe it's in Colombia. And I ship the work unframed, and then the gallery's in charge of framing the work and dealing with all the logistics after that. But it's a fairly simple process of making and shipping the work, insuring it, and shipping it.
Do you paint bananas in a lot of your work? So for instance, you might have bananas hanging in midair over a country road, or even in the middle of a parlor at Buckingham Palace. And one can't help but sense that there is some kind of social disruption that you are going for, some commentary on social issues. I wonder if you could comment on that. Do the themes that you're presenting have anything to do with the history of Colombia? And are they, in fact, social issues that you're talking about?
Absolutely. I've been painting bananas for a while now, almost 20, 15 years. And the banana itself, I wasn't interested in the banana itself as a fruit, but as a way to speak about the relationship between me being in the U.S. and coming from a different place. So it's basically making a commentary on the dynamics of belonging. How does one belong to a place? How does one deal with history and heritage while living abroad? So the banana itself served as a slippery symbol, which enabled me to touch upon different subject matters. Of course, there's the political. Colombia was considered a banana republic. There's a banana trade between the U.S. and Central and South America, which brings up all these political issues surrounding the banana trade. And Chiquita Banana and all these sort of tense and chaotic relationships between North and South. Also, there's the sexual aspect, the banana as a phallic image, which I've been sort of using either to counteract that image or really expose and show its potential as a phallic fruit. And there's also this all the cultural movement around the banana. So you find Carmen Miranda and the way Bananas have been sort of marketed in the U.S. in the purpose of having bananas be cheaper than apples, basically. So this first idea brings up all the sort of corporations dealing with the South, and me as an artist trying to deal and trying to think about how does one exoticize oneself? How does one belong to a place? The banana served as an escape, as a vessel to explore all these themes. The latest drawings sort of deal with they stand away from the banana itself. It's more about its relationship with sort of these Victorian environments with these tropical elements trying to intrude in some way or another or disrupt these sort of places. So I've been doing that with photography and with drawing, trying to make collages and then drawing them and trying to evoke a reality that's not there, but that's made up, but seems as if it were true.
The banana has a critical role in the world economy and in the history of colonialism. So, for instance, right now in Colombia, there's a fair trade banana crisis/revolution. The word banana republic, it comes from somewhere. Migrant workers who are not paid very well, they live in harsh, exploitative working conditions. And so you have in 1928 in Colombia this thing called the Banana Massacre, where workers tried to lobby for stable work contracts and basic standards of living and so on, and soldiers were sent and the strike was put down by force with a lot of killing. This was supported by the United States, who threatened to send in the Marine Corps if Colombia's government didn't send in their own forces and so on. And so there's a history of the banana as a symbol both of life and repression in Colombia. I wonder to what degree does that symbolism really impact your thinking?
Well, Daniel, I think you bring up some interesting points. First and foremost, I was in Boston when the idea of painting bananas came into mind. And in some way, I wanted to challenge the role of the artist. I wanted to be political. I wanted to belong to a bigger conversation, to relate to the victims. And as a Colombian artist, I think we have, from my generation at least, we had an unspoken burden to speak of whatever was happening in Colombia. And at that moment was drugs, drug trafficking, terrorism, kidnappings, and so forth. So I wanted to engage. And this is me in Boston. I was among the only Latino students in my year. And in a way, I was exoticizing myself by speaking of, the war, the kidnappings, and so forth. So the idea of the banana came first as a joke, having the image of Warhol's Velvet Underground cover, and then let's try making bananas and see what happens. And then one painting of banana was done, then several, and then who knew I was making banana paintings and banana drawings. So having that into perspective, I think that the banana helped me sort of speak of in a direct manner, but in a different way, my relationship with back home. Because I think artists, it's very important for me to be honest and to speak from a place of honesty. And at that moment, me being so far away from all the issues surrounding kidnappings, banana trade, injustice, exploitation, whatever, it didn't feel honest for me to sort of bear down, have the flag, and really make it political and in your face. So the banana sort of for the American crowd, for the American public, served was a banana. I mean, cartoons slipped on banana peels. Bananas were everywhere. But the issue of the banana was the weight of the banana, of why bananas were important or why bananas were in this, wasn't relevant. So I had two main ideas, I mean, two main purposes of using the banana as a vessel. One, to exoticize myself as a Latino, as a Latin American painter within a very conservative white public, and also as a way to subvertively try to acknowledge a reality that I wasn't living at the time.
There's an artist, Corinne Turner, who is black, who is from Germany, lives in Oakland now, and who paints images of watermelons, a stereotype, very often derogatory of African Americans, but which she has seized as a way to probably engage in this sort of tongue-in-cheek humor, as well as exoticization that you're talking about, but also to sort of redeem these images. But I listened to you talk about this exoticizing oneself, and I can hear sort of the tongue in cheek, but I also hear perhaps some of the sexual imagery of Georgia O'Keeffe. And I wonder if any of your work is sort of an homage, or if you are interested in that aspect of it, the sexual imagery of the banana.
Absolutely. I mean, I was a heterosexual male, Latino male, making banana painting, and it was interesting, because basically the sexual aspect was so in your face, and I was actually exposing that. And then I would say, let's try to transform this phallic image into the opposite. So basically, I was only using the peels and trying to have a fight against the symbol that I knew I was gonna lose anyway, which was having the phallic become a very, like, making vaginas out of the banana peels. So this sort of opened a whole new window of possibility, where I was using the fruits to resemble something else, and then from that sexual sort of interest, playing along with it, came the banana peels started flying, started morphing into different shapes, and it became very playful.
I do want to ask you about Picasso and sort of the treatment of your of the bananas as a geometric reality as well. Is any of that in your mind when you're creating? Are these geometric abstraction, or are they are the, is it more symbolic expressionism?
I think it's both, and I'm very, very concerned with the symbol and what it means to make an image. So I'm very much aware of how the image gets drawn, and what it means to be drawn in that manner, in black and white or versus color, in a large scale versus small scale. So I think these are all very pictorial, very formal concerns that address sort of the geometry of the image, its density, its scale and size.
So let me switch gears and ask you a bit about being a working artist. Do you have to work overtime to make sure that your message, the message that you're conveying, the interest that you have is clear? These sort of abstract and symbolic thoughts, or what do you do in your marketing to make sure that people understand what they're buying and what it means to you and how it's significant?
It's interesting to hear the world. I mean, the question: how do I market myself? I remember one of my best teachers at SBA in New York, Lucio Pozzi, who said, "People creatively misunderstand work, your work, and as long as it comes from an honest place and you're always pushing the work further, it'll it'll do its own thing. So when you ask me, how am I mean, if I'm controlling the way, or how do I control the way the work is read, I have to say that I have no control over it. I'm making the work as fun and as challenging as possible. But once it's out in the world, it's its own animal, and I have no control over it.
So that's interesting. So maybe the opportunity there is to develop a dialogue with the audience. To maybe that would be a method of helping to expand the market for your work. You know, of course, a lot of people use social media for that, or blogging, or some other. They use events or speaking gigs. But they, you know, even appearing on the show, you've done a great job on the show of really explaining to your target audience what it is you have in mind creating this work. So let me ask you a related question. How do you balance the market with the muse, the need to sell your work, with the need to pursue your vision and your inspiration as an artist?
Well, I think that these are two different things. I think that as an artist, the chances to prostitute yourself are always in the horizon. So I try to avoid it, having no dialogue with, I mean, I'm not interested in having a dialogue with my audience, because if I start having a dialogue, I'm hearing what they are saying, and then I have a conversation, and I think I prefer to have conversations within myself. And if those conversations have echo with the public, then it's great. I mean, it's amazing when that happened. So for me, I think I have two hats on. When I'm at the studio, I'm trying to make the work. I'm trying to challenge myself, trying not to repeat myself. More often, when there's opportunities to sell work, I'm very hesitant about them, because I think I can be prostituting myself for something that's not organic, doesn't happen organically. Having said that, I'm very much aware of how I market myself. So I have a website, I post Instagram, daily photos on Instagram and Facebook. I have my updated CV, bio, like ready to go. But that's one thing which is different than trying to have a conversation and trying to make money and being in the market and, you know, looking for the opportunities, because I think it's a very thin line between making money and making the work.
Well, so how do you pursue opportunities to show your work and advance your career?
Well, now I have two galleries which are representing me. One in San Francisco, Dolby Chadwick, and one in Miami, Dot 51. But when I started 10 years ago, I applied for everything that came into my hands. I applied for grants. I applied for New American Paintings. I applied for juried exhibitions. I applied for everything that I saw that could push my career further. And it was... I mean, there were a lot of rejections, but eventually things happen, and you take it one stride at a time, and you meet people, and you know the whole the rhythm of how this happens sort of speaks up as you pursue those opportunities. I try to have relationships with galleries, but in an organic way. I believe. In relationships, in long-lasting relationships with galleries, not one-night stands with dealers or with galleries.
So if you were to summarize one or two things that it really takes to earn a living as a working artist, what are those one or two things? What have you learned?
Well, I think the discipline is key, and being focused. Discipline in many ways. Discipline to be at the studio every day. Discipline to really push the work further. discipline to not be sort of discipline to manage rejection. I think that's very important. So discipline will be one of those, and then focus. And I think focused of where do you want your career to go? Where do you want the work to go? I think those two are major, are the most important things one needs to have in mind when thinking of making a living as an artist.
And how do you manage to stay motivated?
Well, I have two kids. I have a 5- and a 3-year-old. That's motivation. I'm very ambitious, so that's also a motivation. I'm an ambitious person that wants to make more interesting work, and I think that one has to be true to that, to really, really pursue that to its fullest. So I think I have a habit. I think when I was growing up, my parents had the habit of going to work and trying hard. And I think those little things stay with you. So I go to the studio, try to be at the studio every day, and I'm working all day. I go to the studio and then go back home, answer emails, send proposals, update the website, and then it's back in the studio again.
You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. We've been speaking with Gonzalo Fuenmayor. For more information on Gonzalo's work and art, go to GonzaloFuenmayor.com. For more information on the fund, visit ClarkHulingsFund.org. And be sure and follow our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening, and thank you, Gonzalo. It's been really great having you.
Thank you, Daniel. It's been a pleasure.